WNYC, there is a big unprecedented court ruling that just came down this hour in the contentious battle over funding for the New York City public schools for this fall and the New York City budget. A New York State judge has basically ruled that he's going to make the city council do a do-over and vote on the school's budget again because they didn't follow the rule requiring input from an educational policy panel. As many of you know, some members of council have been expressing regrets over their original vote to cut hundreds of millions of dollars from the education budget. The mayor wants the cuts based on declining enrollment in the public school system, but parents and educators have been howling that it'll mean increased class sizes and a loss of music and art and other needed programs in their schools. Some parents filed a lawsuit, and now, sure enough, the judge says, go back and do it right. We will see if the city appeals this ruling. But with that breaking news as prelude, now we continue our year-long series, 51 council members in 52 weeks, in which we're welcoming all 51 members of the New York City Council in this year when most of them are new because of term limits and it's majority female for the first time. We are up to District 31 here on week 31. So with us now is Council Member Selvina Brooks Powers, who represents people in the Southeast Queens neighborhoods of Arvern, Brookville, Edgemere, Laurelton, Springfield Gardens, Rosedale, and Far Rockaway. I think I got them all. A lifelong resident of the district, a child of immigrant parents, a former labor activist and staffer for top New York officials. Selvina Brooks Powers first joined the council last year. That was in a special election to succeed Donovan Richards, who became the Queensborough president. Her bio calls her a fierce advocate for equity in city resources, so I'm sure we'll get her take on the school's budget mess through that lens. And council member, great to have you on. Thank you for joining our series, 51 Council Members in 52 Weeks.
Thank you so much, Brian. It's such a great opportunity to be on with you today. As a former comms director, placed a number of elected officials on your show, never been the person being interviewed on your show. So thank you for having me.
And now you've stepped out from behind the curtain and you're on the stage yourself. So can we start with the breaking news? I know this is brand new and I'm sure you're still digesting it, but were you one of the council members who was sorry you voted for the budget in the original form?
So when we vote on the city budget, we do not vote on any particular agency and how they allocate their funding. We negotiate in good faith with the administration. And when we voted on the $101 billion budget, we understood that the federal dollars would be fizzling out at some point this year, because these were things we brought up last year. If you look back at some of the hearings even that I participated in, those were some of the questions I asked. What happens when this money runs out? And so for the past 2 years, what we've seen is an infusion of federal dollars to our schools because of the pandemic, that has been extremely helpful. What the council did do in the budget was we increased the education budget by an additional $700 million because education is a priority for us. And we are completely committed to making sure that our students do not suffer. I know firsthand in a district like the one that I cover how you know, we have historically been underinvested in. And so going into City Hall, that has been something that has been a clarion call for myself. I talk regularly with my principals in my district. When I got elected last year, I began convening a monthly meeting with my principals. I just recently also met with my superintendents to understand what this budget means from them. So I'm on the ground, I'm talking to my parents, I'm listening to my students. I believe, as I've said before, we need to look at the funding model, which the funding model is not new.
And right.
the funding model.
So depending on how you crunch the numbers, it was either a $700 million increase, or it was a $215 million cut, or it was a $400 million cut. But looking beyond that, mm-hmm. the court ruling doesn't say the school's budget was too low. It wasn't about the numbers themselves. It was that council didn't follow the procedure of taking input from the panel on educational policy before the vote. Council declared a funding emergency when the court says no emergency existed. It was just an excuse to get around that step.
Just a point of clarification, Brian. The council is not a party to this lawsuit. So I don't believe that they said that the council did not. So again, a lot of this information is breaking information. And a lot of people are trying to wrap their minds around what this all means. This is the very first time a portion of the budget that the city council has voted on has been invalidated. And there's a lot of complexities to work through.
Right. And we're going to be talking to our education reporter, Jessica Gould, a little after our segment, because she's digging into the details. But if you increase the school budget, you'll either have to cut spending on some other city services or raise taxes, I guess, because the total amount of money you have to spend doesn't change. Is that correct?
So, one, I'm going to separate my response to you. So, on the matter of this court case, the matter still under litigation, as we expect that the administration will appeal. Again, this is still breaking news, so I don't want to step out ahead of the body. But what I will say in terms of technicality, we have a responsibility to have a balanced budget. So I think the direction I see you going in terms of addressing this budget, how does it impact the other? And I think that's something that we have to figure out.
Do you have an example of a school or schools in your district and how they'd be affected by the budget as it currently stands?
You mean prior to the judgment, because I think the judgment
Judgment, right. Because I think part of what happened, tell me if this is your understanding, is that a lot of members of the council didn't really realize that it would result in a lot of program cuts, because on the surface, the mayor's position sounds like nobody loses. The funding per student was not going down. It was just that schools with declining enrollment would lose the proportional amount of the students they lost. So people are asking, why have all these schools been saying it'll force them to eliminate music and art and other programs? So do you have examples of that from your district?
Sure. So this, again, is something that my principals educated me on actually last year, right? When they shared with me when there's this whole process where sometimes they, I guess, owe DOE money. So when enrollment is finalized, and if they're under enrollment, then it changes their budget, because the enrollment-based model is not something that's new. It wasn't started in this budget this year. It's something that has existed. And so I have heard in that lens how it has impacted my school. In the budget that was passed in June of this year, a number of my schools were on the list on DOE's website as at risk of funding adjustments based on the enrollment decline. My principals also told me during the pandemic that they saw a decline in enrollment, which, you know, the final enrollment will be when school actually begins in the fall,
right.
Where schools are able to appeal, and based on that appeal, get immediate funding as a result of that. So I've been talking to my educators, what does this budget mean to you? So when it comes to some of my high schools, they are over-enrolled. So they're actually getting more money as a result of the enrollment-based model. But then there are some of my primary and middle school schools that are impacted, and they saw a decline in enrollment. So they've seen the adjustment as well. And I'm working with them to see how I can be able to assist with that. And, you know, I've been using even my own discretionary dollars. 700,000 of my discretionary funding went to youth in some way, shape, or form. We also have CASA, CII grants. In terms of the arts, I'm very big on STEAM, which my educators in my district know. So, again, I stay close to my educators in the community, my parents, my students, to understand the impact and work with them in partnership to be able to address this. Because again, this is not a new dynamic for my district. I look forward to the day when we are not enrollment-based, because communities like mine that have a digital divide that's been hit hard by Sandy, that was hit hard by COVID, there are socioeconomic factors that impact our students that being enrollment-based does not go far enough for students like mine.
All right. So the whole formula needs to be revisited, you're saying. This is 51 council members in 52 weeks, week 31 in District 31 in Southeast Queens with council member Sylvina Brooks Powers. And let's talk about other things in your district. We ask everyone in this series to paint a people picture of your district for us. Who lives there demographically and how has it changed over your lifetime of living there?
So actually, I grew up in St. Albans, but I've been living in the Rockaways for the past 15 years. And what I love about my district, I truly believe, and I say this all the time, it reflects New York City and the strength of New York City, which is the diversity. My district is a predominantly Black district, but we have a very strong and vibrant Jewish community in the Far Rockaway area. We have a growing Latino community. As well, we have a large Caribbean community. And so it's pretty diverse. Landmass wise, it's a pretty wide district. We have what we call, locals call the peninsula, and some people call the mainland. So we have the peninsula, which has Far Rockaway, Edgemere, Auburn, and parts of Rockaway Beach. And then on the mainland side, we have the JFK Airport. We have Roseville, Laurelton, Springfield Gardens, and Brookville. And, you know, we also have parts of Jamaica Bay as well. And so, again, I think, you know, we have a pretty special district where we, you know, we have a lot of 1 and 2 family homeowners. We have condo owners. I have about 5 NYCHA developments here as well. And everybody, you know, has that sense of community. We fight along with each other around central issues, whether it's around public safety, around environmental issues, issues impacting small minority and women businesses. So I always call my district the Dynamic 31st.
Sounds, I mean, I know that the area, so not only sounds, it is a dynamic district and so diverse and such a vital part and often an under-resourced part of New York City. So I'm asking all the council members, what's the most common reason that constituents have contacted your office since you took office last year? And has whatever that number one reason is surprised you?
So I will say, leaning back into the fact that my district is one of the districts that have been historically underinvested in, I find that there are a lot of need in my community, whether it's illegal truck parking, illegal dumping, flooding and infrastructure issues. We've seen an uptick from time to time in crime. More recently, we've been seeing an increase in gun violence in the local community. We had a 15-year-old that was found deceased of several days ago, the morning after a shooting. And so We see a lot of need. A lot of the issues that we are contacted about, we see a lot of illegal truck parking. We are, like, the JFK Airport is in the district also. So a lot of trucks that are, you know, going to do the cargo aspect or traveling to other parts of the city will often park on our residential streets. Right now, off of Edgemere, I've been fighting to get some of the trucks removed there. We were successful and did an effort with law enforcement a few weeks ago, and we were able to get some ticketed and removed, and we're working to get another series of trucks removed as well. Illegal dumping has been really, really big, especially and infamous on places like the Snake Road, which we call locally, but it's Brookville Boulevard. And we have significant flooding and infrastructure issues. We were vulnerable before Sandy. A lot of infrastructure work has gone into the district, but there's still more work around that that's still needed. And again, you know, we've seen an uptick in crime. Crime overall is down, but more recently we have seen some shootings take place in the district.
So where are you on the scale of the city is out of control on crime since no time like the 80s to the right wing is playing us, exaggerating the situation?
You know, I'm a strong proponent that, like, one lost life is one too many. And there's work to be done. There's a lot that has been done in terms of the investment in programs like the crisis interrupters, which I work to fund and I partner with often. There's been a lot invested in this space, but again, there's more work that needs to be done. We also haven't really talked about the fallout from COVID. How has that impacted people mentally? Is some of that connected to what we're seeing? And how can we begin to take a look at mental health and other issues that may be impacting the crime that we've seen?
Well, you know, some of the progressive members of council, I think the number was 10, objected to the overall city budget, which was passed in June for the new fiscal year that just began last month, on the grounds that it didn't redistribute resources.
I'm sorry, I missed the part of what you said, Brian. Can you repeat that?
Sure. I was saying that there were a number of progressive members of council who objected to the overall city budget that just passed on the grounds that it didn't redistribute resources in the name of equity enough, still not enough for mental health, which you just mentioned, still not enough for affordable housing, for education, as we talked about before, and too much for law enforcement, things like that. Do they have a point, or were you in that group?
So I can't speak to why anyone voted one way or another. I can speak to what I know of the budget. I feel like this budget was one, and we know that there's challenges in terms of the education budget. That we fully appreciate. But in terms of the other aspects of the budget, we worked really hard to make sure that we were being able to maximize the resources that were available, right? We've seen the last several years an infusion of historic record number of funding coming from the federal government that unfortunately is now fizzling out. And at the same time, in the budget, we must be fiscally responsible to have a balanced budget. So I think the council did its best and did a good job at making sure that we were able to fully fund the city FEPS program, voucher program. We were able to provide, even if it's a small bit of relief for homeowners, we were able to see and historic increase in summer youth positions for our young people, creating trauma centers across the city. There's so many good that a lot of people may not realize was in the budget because, you know, it really has not been discussed as much publicly, quite honestly. But there are elements of this budget that is going to bring much needed relief to New Yorkers across the city.
Just about out of time for this week's 51 Council Members in 52 Weeks segment. We're in District 31 with Council Member Sylvina Brooks Powers from Southeast Queens. And we'll wrap it up with the last question that everybody gets because we're inviting each council member to bring a show and tell item from your district, something you'd like people from everywhere else to know about. So what did you bring us for show and tell?
Well, first, I just want to start with two highlights for my district, which is JFK redevelopment, which is a $20 billion infrastructure program in my district that has the potential to be transformative in our community, as well as Jamaica Bay. Parts of Jamaica Bay is in my district. It is the city's largest open space, and it is the only national park in the country that you can get to by train. And for my show and tell, I would say it's the Idlewild Environmental Center. I'm pretty excited about it. It opened up a couple of months ago. It was a long time coming. And it's a space where community could come and learn about the rich environmental aspects of our community, where our kids can really learn about the sciences. And I invite everyone, whether from New York or people visiting New York, to come and visit us in our district.
So cool. I love the
LA National Park. Oh, and Ryan, I can't forget to say and make a plug for Rockaway Beach. We were listed as one of the top 25 beaches in the country. So I have to make that plug.
Sharks. No,
we have dolphins too.
That's right. That's right. People stood up and applauded for the dolphins on one of the local beaches recently. The standing ovation I heard. And I love the only national park you can take a subway to. Council Member Selvina Brooks-Powers, thank you. Continued good luck in office.
Thank you.